I want to talk about plans tonight, our plans and our dreams and our hopes and kind of our way of making it through life. And I want to talk about that just in the context of Proverbs. We've been working through the book of Proverbs, and it's interesting to skip through the Proverbs, and you see kind of the same themes running through. And one of the themes is about planning and structuring your life and organizing your life. And I have to admit that this is another one of those scary areas for me, because I always feel pretty disorganized and pretty, like I don't really plan. Like I really don't know what's going to happen. And part of that terror goes back to high school when I went to the guidance counselor. And the guidance counselor said to me, "So, Rod, what are you going to do with the rest of your life?" And I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow, and I don't know what I'm going to do Thursday, and now you want me to come up with something I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And they gave me a battery of tests and things that I might be good at and that I might consider as a career and what I might have for a big plan. And I had to choose. And then I found out this really cool thing that you could go to college for the first 2 years and all you did was take stuff that, you know, basic math and English and all that kind of stuff. So you really didn't have to decide your major until like your junior year. And I had the doctor of a professor of psychology as my advisor in college. So I had to go sit in his office, and rather than actually helping me, he was analyzing me. You know, he was like, "How do you feel about the rest of your life?" And pretty scared, actually, you know, because I have to make this huge decision, and now I have to declare a major, and I don't know what that major is going to look like, and so there's just a whole lot of fear. It was like during my sophomore year, and so I did the brilliant thing. I dropped out, because, you know, if you don't know what you're going to do, you might as well drop out. No sense paying a lot of money for something you're never going to use, and or you don't know what you like, and so I just dropped out for a while, and then went to work, and somewhere in that I caught fire and decided I wanted to become a Super Joe businessman and become rich and wealthy and run huge businesses, and obviously that's worked out real well. And so plans changed, and so I want to talk about plans, and I want to talk about dreams, and I want to talk about hopes, and I want to talk about ideas. But I don't want to do all the talking, and so what I really wanted to do tonight was to spend a little time interviewing Tom and Mary Kay. Over the last little while, they've made some huge transitions in their lives, and I gave them some questions that I would like for them to talk about. I want you to feel free to ask them questions also. Tom is terrified of this. Mary Kay's already, you know, they're bumping each other. It's okay. But I do want to remind you that it's really tough to sit up here in front of everyone. Eric and I sort of get paid to do it, and we manage to push our fears down most Sundays. But for most of us, it's really hard to come up, and particularly when we just share deep, intimate, important things of our lives. And so give them a lot of grace, and if they stumble, it's okay. And if you ask them questions and they don't know the answer and they look like a deer in headlights, just back off and talk to them privately later. And just be really generous to them if you can. And so I'm going to ask them to come up and hook them up with some microphones, including this one.
I'm not sure how I feel about that introduction.
Yeah, well, it wasn't well planned. Where's my other mic? Okay. Is it on? Beautiful. Make sure you put it up to your lips, because I think it's kind of hard to hear otherwise.
Okay.
I had a list of questions I promised I might ask, so let me dig those out.
He's not Larry King.
I wanted you to talk just a little briefly about what your dreams were early on, what your plans as a couple, as a family, individually. Just talk to us a little bit about your dreams.
We cried a lot.
Yeah. I was thinking back to my childhood, and I didn't have a lot of dreams because I didn't have a lot of hope, even as a child. But there were a couple I did remember. And the first one was I wanted to go to Scandinavia. And I really don't know why, but I remember thinking that that was just such a beautiful place, and it would be something I'd like to do and see. The other one was, and this was a driving force for me, was that I wanted to get married and have children. Two exactly, named one a boy named Jeffrey and a girl named Jennifer. And I remember sitting on the front steps of our house with the old Sears catalog, and I would cut out, first of all, the ideal family. And then I would find all the things that they would need for their home. And those of you that know me know that I did not have a warm, intimate family. And I longed desperately for that. And that's what I acted out as a kid. And then as a young couple, I dreamt that he was Prince Charming, and he was going to be the answer. I mean, I planned it. He was going to be the answer to all the shortcomings in my life. He was going to be everything I needed and wanted, to be taken care of, to be loved. He'd protect me and make me feel safe. And then I think together we, our big plans were to get a house and to have a family. I mean, that for me was the center of all of our early plans.
My plan started with my earliest recollection of a plan was started with a ball that's very round and a basket it goes through. And I wanted to do so well at that sport that others would see God in me. And so I planned to play basketball in high school, and then I planned on going to college, and I planned on being a teacher. But underlying all of that was my plan for life to go smooth. I wanted it to go smooth at all costs. I wanted it to be safe, and I wanted to have a home and family where everyone would feel comfortable, and kind of like, you know, the Beaver Cleaver family somewhat, you know? And it's not all that bad of a plan, but that was really my plan, and I did everything I could to do it. Just going back real quick to what Rod said about being wealthy, I never had a dream about being wealthy, and that plan came true. It was really good. So we couldn't get married to Scandinavia and, you know, do a few other things. But even though the wealth necessarily wasn't there, I still was planning on a very calm, safe, and a life that would go smooth without a whole lot of problems involved with it. So that was my initial plan as a young man.
So what did you do to make those plans come true? Like, talk about some of the specific things that you guys did to make your dream happen, your plan happen.
specifically, as you wanted, I did not follow through with the basketball plan. That fell through. But the
because why?
Pretty much because of fear. I had opportunity, but it had a lot to do with fear. And without going into great detail there, the underlying thing there was that at the end of all of this, I would have a steady job, a teacher, and do that for the rest of my life. Well, in the meantime, just before I met Mary, I got a good job. I didn't necessarily go to school, but I found a good job. And I was at it for a couple of years, and I met Mary, and obviously we got married. And so I found that stability there, that the plan was still intact. Although it changed direction a little bit, my basic plan was still there, and it was working. In fact, I thought I was kind of ahead of the game because a lot of the friends I knew went off to college, and they were still going to college and paying tuition. I was making money. So that was a good thing. And so we got married young, and I got my house, and everything started working just fine as far as I was concerned.
Specifically, I guess, you know, during my dating years, this may sound bad, but I think I would have married the first man that asked me. And fortunately, I did do that, and fortunately it was him. Okay. I was so desperate to be rescued. So, you know, my plan was intact because we do have, you know, we did get a house. You know, I got married. We got a home. We got a Jennifer and a Jeffrey and then a Sarah. So we had a little addition to my plans. But, you know, specifically it was, you know, a determination on my part to make it happen. And, you know, Tom was like, sure, fine, let's go, you know, whatever you want. So.
And it kept a peace, too.
Yeah.
You know, that was real good. And I just to add something to that, if we're looking at the big picture, these were my plans, these were our plans, but, you know, I don't really specifically remember him saying to God, you know, what's your plan? These were pretty much plans that we made separately, together, that were pretty much on our own, thinking that God will just automatically bless them.
Did you feel successful is one of the questions, and how did you define success? But also, just your interaction with each other, how did you work out, now that you were two of you and you couldn't each have the plan, how did that work out between the two of you?
You know, I think we had so much of the same plan, and we fed each other on that. I could tell a story if you don't mind telling a story. When I was going through this plan that I had previously that I was going to go off and play ball somewhere and it didn't come true, I didn't give it up altogether. And we'd been married for a few months, and I don't know what triggered the discussion, but it was, you know, boy, I sure would like to go back to school, and I would like to play ball, and I would like to be able to do this, that, and the other thing. And she called my bluff. She said, well, if you really want it so bad, go do it. So I didn't. and that, you know, that was the end of that dream, but it perpetually kept that other dream alive, is that underlying dream of safety and peace and being at peace with life. So I don't know if I answered your question with that story, but Mary will go on.
Well, I think as a couple, I truly believe that we seek out a mate that will accommodate our demands and our sin. And I think we both did that very well.
Very well.
Yeah. And so he wanted to keep the peace all the time. And, you know, I wanted things and different events to happen, and so he would help make them happen. So there was a, there wasn't much turmoil in our relationship at any time, just because we fed into each other's stuff. And yeah, so he was the peacekeeper, and so, you know, I'd be upset about something and he'd figure out a way to make things right, as far as I was concerned. And, you know, so it was very unhealthy, but it was very peaceful.
And it was our plan. So, you know.
How did God begin to interfere with your plan or start talking about how God interferes?
God has a funny way of doing things. Not, it just seems like, you know, and it's not true, but it seems like they always, he always turns you around and gets your attention in very, very strange ways, ways that you not necessarily would want, okay? There's been three different, very distinct times in my life where there have been life-changing experiences, and this one here was when my son, Jeffrey, was born and found out that he inherited something from me I didn't particularly want him to inherit, and that was all the allergies and asthma and breathing problems. And so, to make a long story short, we ended up moving to Arizona. Now, you may ask, how would somebody whose whole idea was to keep things calm and the same and peaceful move 2,000 miles away, away from everything and everybody he ever knew?
Without a job?
Well, I thought I had a job.
That's true. You did.
See? This is where it started breaking down, you know, and God started getting my attention. I just thought I could take this dream that's over here, and I'll move it over here. It'll be just fine. I worked for Sears. I will transfer. I will do the same job. Once again, my plan. I'm going to do the same job, and just in a different place. In fact, there's a church just like mine, and it's right over here. And I'm going to buy a house right over here so I can go to this church. And I'll still have my family, I'll still have my church, and I'll still be able to keep the peace. Wow. Was I wrong? this is when God began to really work in me. And it got so bad because the transfer didn't make it. And I tell you how bad it can get. You have to go out and sell cars to make a living. There's nobody selling cars.
Try to sell cars.
Very good, because I made a lot of friends selling cars, and you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to make money. But it just didn't work at all. And we were going down very fast, you know, financially, everything. We were getting to the point where we were looking to sell our house so that we could afford to pay the bills. And so my plan just totally unraveled at that point. And unaware that, you know, I could have a plan B, I was still stuck on plan A, and it was very difficult to see beyond that and see what God's plan was, because I was too interested in what my plan was to see his. Did you want anything? Oh, there were three places. I'm just going to tell about one now.
Oh.
I leave them hanging a little bit.
Were you reaching?
Oh. Hmm? Oh. I think with me, more than one event, from the time I remember, my life just was unraveling slowly, very slowly. And, you know, I tried to hold my world together and everyone else's world together by being a controller, by being a perfectionist. For surely somebody's going to really appreciate you when you do everything better than anyone else could possibly do it. But that plan backfired because I found out that everybody hated me because you know, I offered no grace. It was my way or it was the wrong way. So it was just a steady, steady thing. And our move out here to Arizona did have a huge impact on me. For one, Tom went into a deep depression when he couldn't find a decent job and support us. And that was really hard for me because what I did feel I had some control over, I lost that too. I didn't have someone who would protect me or, you know, rally around me or anything. He would have been happy to stay in bed 24/7, and that left me with even more responsibility. And so, you know, there was this huge unraveling over time until one day, not too long after we started coming to the village, I just went to Eric, not knowing who his parents were or anything else, and I said, "Do you know a name of a counselor? I can't live like this anymore. I'm desperate, and I'm out of control. My world's out of control, and I don't know what to do with it." So, you know, that's when a lot of changes started to happen in me.
Scripture says that God orders our steps and that He walks us into those places. And did you have any sense of God's presence in those times? Were you aware of that His plan was different than your plan? And how did that all feel? Like, talk about your relationship with God during those times.
I was angry. Well, I can still remember looking up that verse in Isaiah that says, you know, the dry and thirsty land where there is no water. Why did you bring me here? You know, it's terrible. You know, I was back there. Everything was safe and sound and smooth. It was going good. Why did you bring me to this desert? I was really angry. And, you know, it just doesn't work. I think it's good to, you know, let God know that you're angry, but also, you know, realize that He's in control. And this is the transition from my plan to His plan. When I look back, I can see what He was doing, you know. But at the time, you know, you're going through the desert, and it was very, very hard. It was someone at the gas company, at the car dealership, that really encouraged me and moved me from. Oh, that was good. I felt
I like that.
I was ready to fight with
God. You were ready to fight with God.
I was ready to fight with God. And there were some people who gave me kind words and started asking me questions and really moving me to make some changes. And when I made the one change, which was going to, at that time, a different church, things started to turn around in my life. I started listening to Him a little bit more, and situations begin to brighten a little bit. But it wasn't until, you know, God put me, I mean, I don't want to say I hit bottom, but I could see it was pretty close.
I guess, you know, anger is the bottom word, but instead of a flaring temper, I grew so that I refused to trust Him because He hadn't ever, it didn't seem like He ever came through for me. Whenever I did trust someone, they usually, at some point, turned on me. And so I got to the place where, you know, I just figured I had to take care of myself because there was no one, including God, who seemed to care enough. To come through for me once in a while. And even though Tom kept the peace, it really wasn't what my heart wanted. I didn't understand that at the time. I see it now. But so that didn't satisfy. And nothing that I attempted satisfied. And I was lonely. And I was angry. And I just was at a place where I shut down because I couldn't be hurt anymore. And so I just lived in my own little world, a lot of it in my head and in my home. And, you know, so that's how it impacted me. And I remember thinking once when I was younger that my mother, I thought I couldn't understand why she had become reclusive. And I think that, you know, when I realized that that's what my plan was when I first realized just how much I was like her. And through most of my life, I despised her. And it, you know, kind of showed me, put light on just how much I hated myself, too. So, yeah, I was just bitter and shut down.
In recent times, you've gone through a really traumatic event. Talk a little bit about that and how that's changed your plans and how that's changed how you think and just what's going on with all that.
I mentioned three things in my life that were traumatic. The first one was when I got out of high school and I saw the beginning of the crumbling of my dream. And at that time, I also got pretty sick and went through the thing with depression. You know, as I look back, I didn't recognize it as such then, but it sure was. And then moving here, going through the used car selling business was, you know, just horrible. It was just a traumatic experience, and it was depressing. Now we come to a situation where a lot of things changed in my life between the used car salesman and now. If I can just back up a little bit and, you know, say how we ended up at the Village here, because that's really where the start of things changing dramatically really came from. While Mary was home with her father, who was living with us, he had Parkinson's disease, and she would go to church where Rod was at, and I would go on Sundays where the Christ Community or some big old place that I can go in and out. So we weren't even worshiping together for well over a year. And so I would go out searching for, maybe there's some place when all this is done and her dad's not around anymore, I'm going to find the place where we can go and she's going to be able to be so much better and we're going to grow and yada yada. Well, I found that place, I thought, which will remain nameless, and we went there and we came out. And I just knew what she was going to say. And I just looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, "We're not going here, are we?" And she said, "No." And that was the end of it. You know, we were no longer there. We were beginning stages of becoming, of all things, villagers. And Mary jumped in with both feet, and I was barely putting my toe in. And just jumping to a year ago or so, I was still here at the Village worshiping with everybody. This was Mary's church, not necessarily mine, but I was trying to fool everybody, and the only person I was fooling was myself. It's very embarrassing. And so anyway, I got sick. I started getting real sick. Most of you know the story. I ended up with a tumor. Yeah. The pancreas and the bile duct, diagnosed with cancer, humongous surgery. God just beginning to work in both of our lives, really. One of the hundreds of lessons that are going to continue to be learned from all of this is that, and when I look back, I see how the Village and God was working with me through the Village because when I went through this, there wasn't depression. I mean, if there's any reason to be depressed, it's when you think you're going to die. You know, I think that's a pretty good reason to be depressed. But instead, finally, after going through situation after situation and leaving pretty much God out of any decision that we make or any plan that we made, we had all kinds of plans. I have all kinds of plans before that. And they were not written in, I mean, they were written in stone. I mean, I've holding on to them really, really tight. I wanted these plans. I probably told all of you my plans, okay? But through this experience, God made himself real to me in so many ways, and one of which was, okay, God, your plan, okay? Not my plan. I don't know if you've ever heard that Bill Cosby thing with Noah, you know, and it was where the lightning comes down at a certain point, and Noah says, was complaining to God about all kinds of things and how his life was going. The lightning comes down, the rain starts coming down, and he says, "You and me, Lord, right?" Okay, and it's kind of like it was, you know. I all of a sudden it went, it came together and said, "Okay, I know that, God, your plan is your plan for me." And I can actually remember being wheeled on a gurney to the operating room and saying, "God, whatever you want. You know, if you want me now, I'm ready to go. If you want me to stay here, you got to have a pretty good reason. Let's go for it and see what happens." And I had real peace with that.
Can you actually tell us what your plans were and then how they
changed?
Yeah. Sure. Sure. I thought everybody heard this story, Eric, but probably nobody had. Okay. I think before all of this happened, there were, if you talked to me at all, you'd know two things. You'd know where I was from, and you knew where I was going to go. And where I was going to go was in a year from now, but in 2 years back then. In 2 years, I was going to retire from the gas company. I was going to take my money. I was going to sell my house. When I sold my house, I was going to take that money, and we're going to go up to Phoenix because that's where my grandchildren are, and I was going to live the rest of my life out there. The village would be behind me.
And what would you be driving?
Oh, yeah, I also had a plan for a Corvette.
What color?
Red. You know, and that's another story, though, Rod. You know, but it's part of my plan. I'm sorry. I understand. I have to have other people tell me my stories because I tell them and I forget them. So I was going to take my Corvette that I was going to buy after I retire. I'm driving up to Chicago, dropping off Mary at her sister's house. I'm going to pick up my brother up in Michigan, and then we're going to make a tour of the Hall of Fames of sports, from baseball, basketball, and football. I come home, pick up Mary, and go live in Phoenix the rest of my life. I all lived happily ever after. But I held on to that dream. Everybody knew that dream. Anybody I could tell it to heard that dream, and that's just what I was going to do. Okay, that was my plan, and it was my plan. Okay. And Mary tended to agree with it only because I threw in the grandkids on it. That's called the trump card, you know, those of you who know. Yeah, you pull the grandkids on and say, "I want to move you to your grandkids. You think that's all right?"
Plus weeks of shopping with my sister in Chicago.
I didn't hear that part of my plan. Okay. She had that separate plan, but that was definitely a my plan thing. And just to go the full circle, after all of this took place, and God miraculously, I really believe that, spared me, I came out just thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, what am I doing? You know, is this plan, whose plan is this anyway? Is this my plan, or is it God's plan? And it's pretty obvious whose plan it was. And we talked about it, which is something we didn't do a lot of other. A lot of our other plans, we didn't talk about them. You know, we moved here without talking about it. So anyway, we talked about it, and we said, you know, God, what's your plan? We included him in this. And it turns out that it's not necessarily God's plan that we just, a year from now, run up to Phoenix. We're going to wait it out. We're going to see what God wants, where He wants us, what He wants us to do, and then we'll go forward. But it's taken all this time to learn that. Some of us are fast learners. Some of us not so fast. So.
Well, it was an interesting year for me, too. And I think the biggest life lesson I learned was that death really is personal. I mean, I've walked through both my parents dying, being with them, being with his dad when he died, a lot of things like that, but it wasn't, it didn't impact me like Tom's experience impacted me. And all the years I can remember, you know, I'd say, oh, yes, I know I'm going to die. You know, everybody dies, yada, yada, yada. But this took it to a new level. And getting in touch with my mortality as well as Tom's has had a huge impact on how I look at life and how I look at my relationships and at my relationship with God. I truly believe that I live much more in the moment than I ever have in my life before. It's interesting because Tom and I were talking about this subject earlier today, and you know, we're like, well, what plans do you have now? You know, I think we've kind of jumped too far to the other side of the pendulum a little bit, but we're learning and we're trying to understand, you know, where it's good to make plans and where it's good just to be living that freedom of moment-to-moment life. So, anyway, yeah.
Thank you. Anything else you want to say before? Okay.
You give me this thing.
Okay, you get.
One of the things that Mary and I talked about today, and one of, if I can back up just a little bit, it's been my practice for a long time, no big deal, but I read through Proverbs. I want to read through Proverbs, and we're doing it here. And so many times I've read through Proverbs, but now when I get home from the hospital and I'm sitting in my recliner, you know, keeping my eyes open a little bit, and then when they are open, I'm reading Proverbs again. But you know what? After reading them all that time, I'm seeing things that I never saw before about God's plans and how He has plans. And then I start cross-referencing and doing all this other stuff, and I'm finding out that, you know what? It's not wrong to make plans. In fact, God doesn't have a problem with us making plans. God's problem is our attitude toward those plans and leaving Him out of them. Boasting about tomorrow is something we read in Scripture, and that's not a good thing. You know, I don't think the guy who talked about, it was Matthew, about building greater buildings and silos for his grain and all that stuff. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then what does God say to him? He says to him, you fool. And He doesn't say to him, you fool, I don't believe that he filled up his barns and did all this stuff. It's just his attitude of leaving God out of it. And I think that's one of the big lessons I learned about His big plan, is that we are to make plans. God wants us to have plans, dreams, but He wants to be included in them. And the way we're included in Him is to, like Eric said a couple weeks ago, about getting into His Word and knowing Him and knowing what He wants for you, because He has plans. And I'm sure Rod will talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you. Let me zip through some things here. If I could flip the screen. planning is good. Tom just made that case. Planning is really good. There are lots of different paths that we can walk. I want to read Proverbs 16, 1 through 9. To man belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the reply of the tongue. All a man's ways seem innocent to him, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. The Lord works out everything for his own ends, even the wicked for a day of disaster. The Lord detests all the proud of heart. Be sure of this, they will not go unpunished. Though through love and faithfulness sin is atoned for, through the fear of the Lord a man avoids evil. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies live at peace with him. Better a little with righteousness than much gain with injustice. In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. Planning is good, as Tom said. There are lots of different ways. I don't think my plan to be the president of Charlie C. Jones Battery Electric Company was a bad plan. It was a good plan. It just wasn't what God intended down the road. There are lots of different ways I could have gone, and that you all can go. Planning requires humility. When you read this passage, it talks about humility, being small, not being humble, being submitting your will, your way, your plan to the bigger plan. That requires a lot of humility. That requires seeing yourself as creature, not as God, not as the creator, not as the one who has power. Our success in our plans is determined by commitment to God. When our plans are committed to God, it says that's when they're successful. It doesn't matter if, what specifically those plans are. The road to success is the submission, the commitment, of God. Just to simply put it before God and say, show me what you would have me do. Pride is a problem. Pride and arrogance is always a problem. We need to avoid evil. That pride, that I am in charge of life, what Tom and Mary Kay were talking about, I am in charge of my life. I haven't invited God into this conversation. I simply, I know what's best for me, is the height of arrogance. It's really pride, and it's what we all suffer from. I like this idea of a better a little with righteousness. That small plans, when we live rightly, when we are honoring God with our lives, are more valuable and more precious. We don't always think that way. We think of big as beautiful and the big plan, the overarching plan. But sometimes God is very much in those small plans, this little bit, and that we've done where we've been right, righteous, that is, godly, avoiding the pride. And plans are always subject to change. It says that a heart of a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. I really like the intimacy of that, that each time I take a step and my foot comes down, it may not come down in the place I imagined. Because we live on a, you know, if you really think about it, we live on a spinning ball. I mean, it's spinning pretty slowly, but we live on a spinning ball. So when I look at a place in front of me and I say, okay, I'm going to put my foot down there, I think, well, I put my foot down. But the truth is, I put my foot down in a different place than I could have imagined, because that earth is turning. Things are changing all around me. Always life is changing. And so when we pick up our foot to take a step, we don't know what lies in store. Plans are always subject to change. The plan is I'm going to go work for years. When I get to Arizona, piece of cake, problem. Now I'm selling used cars. Or trying to. It's horrifying. Like, we don't know where our foot's going to come down. We don't know. We like to think we do. We like to think if we have it all planned out and worked out that it'll be okay. It's not. If you could flip my screen. This talking about God's plans and God's response to our plans. God weighs motives and not results. I think that's been one of the hardest lessons for me to learn, that God is measuring my heart. He wants to know if my heart is right, that he's not really interested in the results. So if I go off and I say, okay, I'm going to plant this church and we're going to build it and we're going to have, you know, 1,000 people or 10,000 people, and it's just going to be the greatest thing, and it's going to take over Tucson, and we're going to be, you know, well, that's, what's my motive? What's my heart? Well, so that we can draw attention to Rod, or we can draw attention to Eric, or we can draw attention to this concept that we've dreamed up. Who's it about? What's our motive? Or can I simply say, God, I want so much to follow you. I want so much to be yours, to be in submission to you. And then God says, you know what? I'm really happy with you, you know, ministering to 50 people. That's really cool. I really like that about you. Because your motives, he's measuring motives. He's not measuring results. We often, particularly in our American culture, get so results-oriented. We get so numbers-driven. We get so, how much money do I make? How well am I providing? Where am I on status, symbol, line, list? Do I have the right clothes? Do I have the right look? Do I have the right whatever? God's interested in not results, but motives. He wants to know where your heart is. God works things, it said in here, for his own ends. God has a purpose. And he's working often at cross purposes to what we're doing. We have a plan. You know, Dave and Adrian, their plans to go to Detroit and become a doctor. Now, we don't know if that's going to happen. We know that that's the plan. But actually, God works things out for his own ends. That's hard to trust. That's hard to believe that that's really true sometimes, but that's actually true. And so 5 years from now, David may well not be a doctor, and matter of fact, they may be back here. And we don't know, because God is actually determining how it's all going to end up. We like to think we're in charge. We're not. We're not. God punishes wrong-heartedness. God actually changes our plans often to get our attention. He, according to this, it says that when we are proud of heart, when we're detesting God by our actions, when we're planning and it's all about us, God is often saying, no, you're going to be punished. It's going to hurt. You're going to get a spanking from God, because we really are in that position where God is saying, no, that's not the way you're going to go. I have a better plan for you. I have a better idea. Ultimately, God's way brings peace. It's interesting that the one thing I want is peace. When I can't get peace my way, I demand it. God says no. But when you actually follow my way, somehow we end up at peace. And then finally, God determines our steps. God actually plans them intimately. And if you flip my screen, here's God's big plan. And I want to read Jeremiah 29. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray, listen to you. You will seek me and find me, and you will seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. The big plan is that we're known by God. God knows each one of us. He knows our hearts. He knows us. He knows us more intimately than anyone else can. We are known by God. That knowing is personalized. It's very personalized, but it's always done in the context of community. We're known by God in the context of this group, but we're also very individually and very specifically known. His plan is to prosper us. That's hard to believe sometimes, that God really wants good things for us, that he really has a desire, a passion for us, to never harm us and to prosper us. It is. To give us hope. To give us hope, to give us a future, and to bring us back to him. to help us, that's God's big plan. That's what God's big plan is. Those are the things that he longs for us. When we are hopeless, he offers hope. When we don't see a future, he offers a future. That's what he wants to do. We'll flip the screen one more time. Practical things. I want you to just think about a few practical things about your planning and how you plan out what God's calling you to. One is, what am I good at? What am I naturally good at? What gifts and talents and abilities do I have? You will probably not know those by yourself. You need to discover those in community. You need to ask the people who you love, who you trust, who are around you, say, what am I good at? What are my weaknesses? Same thing. I know that if you've grown up in the education system in the last little while, you've been told that you're good at everything. It's not true. You know, you really stink at some stuff. And it takes community to tell you that. Loving, trusting community requires that you know your weaknesses as well as you know your strengths. A lot of times we say, well, you know, I'm going to go do this great thing, and everybody around you is going, no, really, you're not going to be able to do that. You're weak in that area. It's okay. Tom talked a lot about fear. Why didn't I go play basketball? I'm afraid. Be honest about what your fears are. Announce them. Say them out loud. What am I afraid of? The other thing that I often invite people to do is think about what you would do if time and money were no object. Now, time and money are objects, and so it's a problem, but what would you really want to do? Where's your passion is another way to say that. What are you really passionate about? I remember the very first time I walked out to preach a message, and I started preaching, and I thought, I love this. I want to do this for the rest of my life. Man, I am so tired of bookkeeping. I never want to do accounting again as long as I live. This is it. I love this. This is good stuff. What are you passionate about? Trust me about the time and money thing. Anyway, then what do I want? That another way of asking the passion question. What do I want? What am I really wanting? And then Eric's question over the last couple of weeks. Not only what do you want, but what do you need? What does this community need? What do the people around you need? What are you offering them? And then, of course, learn flexibility. Whatever your plan is, health, death itself interferes with our plans. Life changes dramatically. It's instantly we live in a different world than we did. And we have to adapt and be flexible because plans change. Ours, the communities around us, and God's. Father, thanks for this conversation tonight about you and about how you call us to plan, and that planning is what you want us to do, but that you want us to trust you and to be dependent on you and to humble ourselves before you. Father, I just pray that you would give us the courage to do that, that we would plan our lives in such a way that it corresponds to where you would have us take steps. Father, I pray that each person in this room would learn to trust you enough to know that when they pick their foot up, that they set it down where you would have them set it down. Father, take away the pride and the arrogance. Help us fight against all those things that make life have to work a certain way. And help us to simply walk with you and to plan to do that and to trust you. Pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. As a response, if you've brought an offering tonight, we have these baskets. If you're visiting, there's no expectation that you would give, but otherwise, feel free to be generous, or you can be generous if you're visiting. There's a chair back there called the sinner's chair. If you're struggling with things, life, sin, your own sin, the sin of others, the sin in the world around us, you just like someone to pray for you, go sit there and someone will come and pray. And there's communion, bread and juice back there in the back. If you, is there another one? No. There. up here. If you know Jesus and you've walked with him and you trust him and you've accepted his plan, then you should come and take bread and juice. And as you take that, remember that he died for you, that he offered himself for you, and that his plan was to bring you to God. And so rejoice in that. If that's not something you can say, if you're not with Jesus in that way, then please refrain from doing that. That would we would really be honored if you would just refrain from doing it. Thanks. Let's worship.